Take two. Today's daf is Yuma Daf Chaf Aleph. We are holding on the bottom of Daf Chaf Amid Beis, three lines on the bottom of the page, Atan Rabban. And today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Lander, in honor of his wife and children. It's also sponsored to mark the second yard site of Mrs. Marsha Fredman, Masha Beis Yitzchak, and in honor of the birth of her namesake, Masha Bas Ilan Moshe Cohen, Vesara Nechama, by Tzipi and Aaron Ross and family. And it's also sponsored to Zecher Nishmas, all of those who were nifter in the terrible tragedy in Meron on Thursday night. We thank all the sponsors very much for the sponsorship. So we were in the middle of discussing two different shitos. When we talk about the gever, krosa gever, is that referring to a tarnagola or is that referring to a person? The person who would wake up the Kohanim in the base of Mikdash. So we said that there's going to be a tanya kavase, a brisa like each opinion. So the Gemara in the context of the first brisa, that's tanya kavase derav, is going to tell us about three different voices that travel from one end of the world to the other end. And then we're going to finally have on the top of Amidah, if we're going to have the Tanya Kavase of the other Shita. And then that's going to bring us into the Tanya Kavase Rabbi Shila. And then that's going to bring us into a discussion of the 10 different miracles that happened in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's going to be the majority of the daf today, is going to be about the 10 different miracles that occurred each day in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara is going to talk about the Nisim of the Aron and the Kruvim, and whether that counts as separate, Aron as separate miracle from the Kruvim, or they count as the same miracle. We're going to have some accounting issues in terms of how we get to the number 10, considering that there seems to be a lot more than 10 miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to discuss what occurred in the first Beis HaMikdash versus the second Beis HaMikdash. On Amud Beis, we're going to talk about the golden fruit that grew on the trees, on the golden trees that Shlomo HaMelech had put into the Beis HaMikdash. We're also going to discuss six different types of fire that exist in the world, and specifically when the pillar of smoke would sweat way on Shmini Atzeres from the Ashana Ma'aracha, how they would be able to tell what kind of year it was going to be from the sway of the pillar of smoke. But at the same time, the pillar of smoke went straight up and it didn't really disperse the way smoke normally would. So the Gemara is going to reconcile those two traditions. So let's begin Daf Chaf Amud Beis, three lines on the bottom of the page. Tana Rabbanan Shalosh Kolos Holchem Misofa Olamat Sofa. There are three voices, three noises, three sounds that go from one end of the world to the other, meaning they are extremely impactful. When we say it goes from, it doesn't say nishmain, it says holchin. That these are the things, Marsha points out, that it's not a physically heard voice, it's just something that these inyanim are heard about from all over the world. Ve'eluhein, kol galgal chama, the movement of the sun, ve'kol amona shel romi, the noises of Rome that we already mentioned earlier, and we said those two cancel each other out, and you would always hear one of them, if not for the other, and the kol neshama b'shal sheyotze min haguf. When the neshama leaves the guf, it's also this very impactful moment. V'yesh omrim af leida, and some say that even the sound of a leida when a child is born, that too is that kind of impactful moment. V'yesh omrim af ridaya, and some say the sound of the malach that's memuna on plowing and watering the ground down here on earth, the malach that's Mimuna for Hashkayas Asados, for watering the fields, that also creates a tremendous call. Ubar Rabban Rachman Nisham Shoshiyotzim Naguf Ubitlua. But Rabbanan asked for Rachman about the call of the Nisham Shiyotzim Naguf, that call should no longer go Misofa Olam Vatsofa. I guess it was too terrifying of a call, and they were Mevatel that call. So Nisham still leaves the Guf, but it doesn't leave with such a call, Raj Gadol, doesn't leave with such a call that goes Misofa Olam Viad Sofa. The Gemara elsewhere tells us that the neshama leaving the guf, it really depends on what kind of neshama it is, whether that's a particularly coarse and traumatic and difficult event, or it's more smooth in terms of from a spiritual perspective. Obviously, from an emotional perspective, it's very often and always very, very difficult, but the Gemara describes when a tzaddik's neshama leaves the guf, it's like pulling a hair out of milk. It's like smooth, because his neshama already has so much kedusha, so it's just naturally, even the way he lived his life is with such kedusha that it just naturally blends, naturally seamlessly fits up in Shemayim. Whereas if you have someone who is a Rasha, who is so connected to the world of Gashmi, so then it's like pulling a thorn out of wool, the Gemara says, that it's considered, it's something that his neshama is too deeply embedded in the world down here, that it's like you're yanking and pulling and it's hard to get it out. That's how it describes the neshama leaving the guf. So different experiences of the neshama leaving the guf, but whatever this kol refers to, they were mevatel that kol. So says Gemara Tanya. Tanya Kavase to Rabbi Shila. There was a brisa that says like Rabbi Shila that Kriyas HaGever means Karatar Negola. I mean, up until now we only brought the brisa that supports Rab, that Kriyas HaGever means the person, some person waking all the people up in the Beis HaMikdash. But now we have the brisa that says that it's Karatar Negola, that Ayotzi LaDerech called him Kriyas HaGever, Dama Barosho, that if someone is traveling alone before Kriyas HaGever, meaning traveling alone at night, the Gemara Pesachim tells us, L'olam Yetze Adam B'chitov, Yikanis B'chitov, a person is always supposed to travel when it's light outside. You're not supposed to travel in the dark. It's considered to be dangerous. So if someone does so, it's Dama Barosho if he's traveling alone. Rabbi Yoshi Omer Ad Sheyishna, that he should wait until there's a two times of a Kriyas HaGever. V'yesh Omer Mat Sheyishalish. Some say wait till three times, till the rooster crows three times. Ubeze Tarnagol Omru B'Tarnagol Beinani. And they're talking about an average Tarnagol that doesn't crow too early or too late. So that's what the Brisa writes Beferish. A Kriyas HaGever is the Kriyas HaTarnagol. Someone just sent me a video this morning that they were walking to Vasikin at the Kotel a couple of weeks ago, or a week ago, I don't know when exactly, and they had their video on their phone along the walk, and you heard as they were walking a Kriyas HaGever, and that, so normally, okay, Kriyas HaGever, but that's a holy Kriyas HaGever, that's the Kriyas HaGever that we're talking about, that signifies the Avodah and the Beis HaMikdash. So that still happens, and Be'ez Hashem, soon it will signify what it's meant to signify. Am Rav Yidom Rav, B'shash Yisrael Ol Neregel. So the Gemara is going to discuss the crowds in the Azara on the Regalim, because the Mishnah had mentioned that they had to do the Truma Sedeshin earlier on the Regalim, because by the time they were ready to start the day, the Azara was already packed. So we're going to talk about the crowds that gathered on the Regal. So B'shasha Yisrael on the Regal, Omdim Tzvufin Mishtachvim Revachim. When they would go into the Azara, they were standing very tightly packed together, but when they had to bow down, everyone had their own Dalet Amos and no one bumped into each other. There was plenty of room to bow down. V'nimshachna Achas Esreyama Achari Beis HaKapores. And the crowd spread to 11 Amos beyond the Beis HaKapores. So says Gemara, my Kamar. Well, if anyway, there's a miracle that happened, that they were all able to bow even though they were Omdim Tzvufim. So why did they need an extra 11 amos then? Why did when they bowed, did it go another 11 amos? It says, no, you misunderstand. Hachi kamar. Even though when they were Omdim Tzvufim, there was nowhere for the crowd to go. The crowd was stuck. They already had extended 11 Amos beyond the Beis HaKapores. Still, Omdim Tzvufim, they were Omdim Tzvufim in that place. And even though they were already extended so far out, still, K'shein Mishtachavin, Mishtachavin Revachim. Still, when they bowed, they were Mishtachavin Revachim. They had room to bow when it came time to bow. Tzvufim, Rashi points out, Lashon Tzaf, Meirov Ha'ama Yinidchakim Ishba Achiv, that they were pushed up one against the other. Ve'ein lo makom lintos al tzido l'kan u'l'kan. They couldn't move, they couldn't adjust their bodies in one way or the other. Ve'zakov kikura and af raglov nitalim me'al ha'aretz. And their feet were lifted off the ground. That the idea was that sometimes when there's such a crowd, unfortunately, anyone who's been to Meiron and Lag BaOmer will tell you, sometimes you could jump up at a certain point and you won't land for 2 hours. Your feet will just be off the ground as the crowd takes you. So this is one of the nisim. Something has to happen to appreciate what it means that it was a nes. It wasn't just a nes of space, that people were able to be mishtachave and that nothing ever happened in the Beis HaMikdash when this happened with such a crowd. It's a very dangerous situation. And nevertheless, they were mishtachavim revachim. We need the nisim of the Beis HaMikdash again. V'zeh echad me'asar nisim sh'nasu b'mikdash. This is one of the miracles that happened in the Beis HaMikdash. Titznan asar nisim nasu b'Beis HaMikdash. There were 10 miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. First one was Lo Yipila Isha Mereach Basar Hagdish, that no woman ever miscarried from smelling the Basar Hagdish that was burning on the Maracha or that was roasting for the Kohanim to eat, even though normally when a Mu'ubera smells something she has a craving, so she needs to eat right away or else it could be very dangerous. And Basar Kodesh is Asa Ba'achila, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that she wouldn't be damaged from that craving that was created by smelling the Basar HaKadosh, even though the smell existed. And so the second nes was, Sriach Basar HaKadosh Me'olam, even though the Emurim were on the Mizbeach for many days sometimes until they were fully burnt, and some of them, the chelik of, that was Nechal was a lot, and it didn't get eaten right away, and there were karbanos that were Nechal, and the Shnei Yamim, so you have meat that, without refrigeration, that was out for 2 days, that, you know, while the carbon could still be eaten, and yet nothing happened. The meat stayed fresh for the entire time. And third, there was never a fly in the Beis HaMitbachayim in the Azara where they would deal with the butchering, even though normally flies are attracted to basar. Flies are attracted to meat and to blood and to that kind of thing. And a fourth, even though there were young men that were serving as Kohanim and Yom Kippurim, as Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippurim, no one ever became a Baal Keri, because that would be a form of tuma that is certainly upsetting, at least to a person on Yom Kippurim. And the Ruach Chaim writes, even though this tuma is an onesh on hirhur, and the chet of is the hirhur and not the ri'iyah, the chet is not seeing the keri, the chet is the hirhur. The Mishnah says that even if it were to happen that a person would have a yetzer hara and would be maharer and therefore was more likely to experience keri, Hakadosh Baruch Hu had rachmanus and was not mevazeh him in this way that he experienced keri. So normally it's meaning a person has bechira, whether he does an avera or doesn't do an avera. Hirhur is also an avera. So the Ruach Chaim is bothered. What's the big chiddush of the nes over here? Let him not be maharer, and then he won't be roa keri. No, elamai, even if he did the avera of being maharer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was protecting the dignity of the Kohanim Gedolim that they shouldn't see keri anyway, even if they were maharer. And the fifth, sixth, and seventh nes neither the Omer, that's fifth, the Shtei Alechem, that's sixth, or the Lechem Apanim, ever had a psul. And that's a very important miracle, because if there was a psul in any of those karbanos, they would not be able to replace them with anything else, as opposed to other karbanos where you could replace them with something else. Because the Omer, there was a Ketziris Omer that was done at night, and they only were kotzer till the shear of Isaron, that it would produce any sarin of flour if you sifted through 13 sieves. And the Shtei Alechem came on Chag HaShavuos and Lechem Apanim on Shabbos, and the baking was done on Erev Shavuos for the Shtei Alechem and Erev Shabbos for the Lechem Apanim. So if they were to become pasul on Yom Tov or on Shabbos, you wouldn't be able to bring anything else in their place. So therefore, it was very critical that they not become pasul, because it's the only option. We didn't have a backup plan for these karbanos. And the eighth miracle is Omdim Tzvufim U'mishtachavim Revachim. The miracle that we were speaking about, that they stood, even though they stood, they were very tightly packed in. When it came time to be mishtacheve, there was plenty of room for everybody to be mishtacheve. And the ninth miracle, v'lo hizik nachash v'akrav b'Yerushalayim me'olam, a nachash or an akrav never did any damage in Yerushalayim. The lashon me'olam, the Medrash Shmuel points out, teaches us that even la'achar chorban habayis, a nachash and akrav never damaged in Yerushalayim, because the kedushas hamakom itself was enough to save from the Nachash and the Akrav. The Tashbitz writes in the Tshuva that that's Me'ein Yimos HaMashiach, where the Pasuk says, V'shashay Yonek Al Chor Pitan, that Ein Arud Memus Ala Achet Memus, that it's not the animals that caused the death, it's the sin that caused the death. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects us from the punishment of our sins in Yerushalayim. V'lo Amar Adam L'chaveru Tzar Li Amakum Sha'alim B'Yerushalayim. And no one ever said to anybody else that there's not enough space for people to stay in Yerushalayim, even though everyone was coming, everyone was being all the regal, so there were massive amounts of people that were going to be all the regal in Yerushalayim. There was always enough space for people to be able to stay over in Yerushalayim. The hotels were always all had enough room. The people's apartments, people were hosting other people in their homes. Everyone always felt there were plenty of places to stay. So now the Gemara discusses the number of miracles that we identified and what counts and what doesn't count. So Pasach B'Mikdash V'Siyum B'Yerushalayim. We started off by saying there were 10 miracles that happened in the Mikdash, and then we started talking about things that happened in Yerushalayim, that a Nachash and an Akrav didn't damage in Yerushalayim. No one ever said Tzar Li Amakom to stay over in Yerushalayim, but that can't be part of the 10, because the 10 miracles happened in the Mikdash, not just in Yerushalayim. So the Chora, we really only listed 8 miracles that happened in the Mikdash, because 2 of these were Yerushalayim miracles. Says Mar Ika Tarti Achronasa B'Mikdash. There were another 2 miracles that happened in the Mikdash to be mashlim the list of 10. What were the 2 that were missing? Titania, me olam lo kibu geshamim eish al gabe alate ma'aracha, that no matter how much it rained, even though the Mizbeach was outdoors, it never put out the fire that was on the ate ma'aracha. Va'ashana ma'aracha, afilu kol aruch shabayolam ba'osum anashos bo, ein mazizuso samim mekomo. And another miracle that happened is that the ashana ma'aracha went up in a straight pillar, and no matter how windy it got, in Yerushalayim it gets pretty windy, no matter how windy it got, the pillar of smoke just went straight up. It never moved. It never dispersed in different directions. So says the Gemara, okay, those are the 10 miracles you identified. Vesuleka, weren't there more miracles in the Beis HaMikdash? V'atani Rav Shmaya b'Kalnevo. Rav Shmaya taught a brisa in the city of Kalnevo. Shivrei Klicheres, the broken shards of a Klicheres that they would cook the Basar Katshe Kachim in, and they would then have to break the Kalim because of the Blios in them, and you can't remove the Blios from Klicheres. Nivloin b'Mekom, that they were swallowed up by the ground where they were, because if they were not, then there would be heaps of garbage of broken shards of clay charis in the Beis HaMikdash. V'amar Abaye, Marav, V'notza, V'dish Mizbeach HaPanimi, V'dish HaMenorah, Nivlon Mimkom. That was not the only thing that was sort of swallowed up by the ground. The crop and the gizzard of the Olas Ha'of that they removed before the Haktara, and the ashes that they shoveled out from the Mizbeach HaPanimi, and the Shemen and Psilos that they shoveled out from the menorah were also just swallowed up in the place wherever they put them down. So you see that there were other miracles in the Beis HaMikdash. Why didn't the Mishnah count these miracles? So it says Gemara, Psulei Tlasavu, the 3 Nisim of Lo Nimtza Psul, Ba'omer, B'shtei Alechem, B'lechem Apanim, it really, we listed them as 3, but really, Chashvinu Kichad, B'chad, they should really be counted as 1, that there was never a Psul in any of those Menachos that we identified, the Karban Omer, the Shtei Lechem, or the Lechem Apanim. But it doesn't count as 3. So Apik Trei, Va'ayil Trei. So now you've cleared out two slots for miracles. So you could put in these 2 miracles, so that's how you get to the number 10. So Frakti Gemara Ihachi, if that's true, that the things that are similar to each other count as a single miracle, so the Omer, the Shtei Lechem, Lechem Apanim, because they're so similar to each other, they're all one miracle, well, Blue and Ami Trei Havu. That which was swallowed up is also two, the Chashun B'chad, that we should now count as 1. So Chasrul, and therefore we're left with only 9. Meaning we said the last 2 that we added were that the Shivrei Kli Charis were Balua in the ground, and that the Dishon HaMizbeach and Dishon HaMenorah and other stuff was also Balua. But that's all similar to each other. So that should all count as 1, and therefore we should still be left with only 9. Says the Gemara Ikanami Achriti. There's another Nes that we have not yet mentioned. Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Nes Gadol HaYanasa B'lechem Apanim. There was a great miracle with the lechem upon him, that siluko kisiduro, that it was warm when they would remove it from the shulchan, as it was when they were misadarit on the shulchan 7 days prior. Shenemar, the pasuk says by the lechem upon him, that in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, that it's lasum lechem chom biyom hilakcho, that even on the day that it was taken from the shulchan, it was chom, it was hot, it was warm bread on the day that it was taken off of the shulchan. So that too was a miracle, the freshness of the lechem upon him throughout the week. And when you consider the fact that the lechem apanim was not chametz even, it was matzah, so it was dough that never rose, and it was thick matzah, it was a tefach thick, so if you've ever had the pleasure of eating Sfardi matzah on Pesach, so the instructions on the box say, do not take it out of the freezer until 1 hour before eating, then warm it up, and then you can eat it. Why? Because if you take it out of the freezer, and these are not a tefach thick, they're less than an inch thick, they're maybe a centimeter thick, and you take them out of the freezer, and you leave them out, they become like a hard brick. They become like a rock, because it was dough that never had a chance to rise. So imagine a tefach high of dough that never had a chance to rise, sitting out on the shulchan the whole week, and still it was warm and soft, ki'ilu, was just taken out of the oven. So that was also a miracle. So says Mar Vesulaka, aren't there other miracles in the Beis HaMikdash? That the space that the Aron took up in the Kodesh HaKadoshim didn't take up any space. That if you would measure, the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 amos, and the Aron was standing in the middle, and the merchak from the Aron to each side was 10 amos. So you would think, well, wait a second, if the whole place is 20 amos, and there's 10 amos on each side of the Aron, where's the Aron going? It's Eina Min Amida, it doesn't even take up any space. I remember many years ago, Rav Mendel Blachman from Keren B'Yavne spoke in my house to a recruiting event for Keren B'Yavne, and he challenged the boys. He said, I want you to tell me what's the greatest miracle that ever happened in Jewish history. And people said, Kriyas Yamsu, and whichever makkah was their favorite makkah for whatever reason. Everyone was giving different Hanani Mishal V'Azariah and the Kivshan Eish. Everyone was trying to think Jewish survival, right? Everyone was trying to think of different... He said, no, he thinks makkah mar neinu min amida is the greatest miracle. So no one was thinking along those lines. And he said, because the rest of the miracles, you could, like, let's say the lechem apanim. Lechem apanim, I know what fresh bread looks like. So I could picture in my mind that the bread never became, that the matzahs never became hard, they never became stale. Because I can know what that looks like. But how do you envision in your mind? Draw a picture of makom aron neinu min amida. It's impossible. You can't even visualize such a thing. It's not even something that the human mind can comprehend happening. So that was also a miracle that happened in the Beis HaMikdash. So Amar Rabbi Nayi, Amar Shmuel, Kruvim b'nei Sayomdin. And not only that, Shlomo HaMelech set up the Kruvim in the Beis Kodesh HaKadosh next to the Aron, not just the Kruvim on top of the Kaporis, but Kruvim on the sides of the Aron, and they stood from north to south with their wings hovering, and the way they were set up, it's also one of the nisim that they were that they stood there, and also apparently were not tofes any makom in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So I asked the Gemara, why aren't those miracles counted? Because nisi debray kachashim, nisi degavay lo kachashim. Nisim that were outside in the azara, though that people were able to see, that's what the Mishnah counts. Nisim that were in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, no one ever saw them, so they exist. Exist, but no one ever saw them. So if no one ever saw them, they don't get counted among the miracles. The warmth of the lechem apanim was also inside, and the Gemara says that the nes was among the nisim that was counted in the Mishnah as one of the ten. Says Gemara, lechem apanim nisi debrayhu. You know, that's a nes that happened on the outside, and it deserves to be counted. The reason it's considered a nes on the outside, even though the makom of the lechem wasn't in the Kodesh HaKadosh, but it was in the heichal, and most people didn't get to see what was going on in the heichal. What does the pasuk mean when it describes lechem apanim al hashulchan hatohar? So from the fact that the shulchan has to be tahar, meaning that it's got to be tahar, can't be tameh, when they put the lechem apanim mechlal shu tameh, that sounds like it's ra'ui to be mekabel tuma. Well, why would it even be ra'ui lekabel tuma? Meaning tahar implies that there was potential for tuma. You wouldn't describe something as tahar if there was no potential for tuma. Well, why in the world would the shulchan even ever have potential for tuma? It's a kliyetz that's never moved, that you're never zazmi mekomo. It's always standing there in the northern part of the heichal. And the rule is that a kliyetz asur l'nachas is not mekabel tuma. Kliyetz, in the parsha of Tumah and Taira, there's a hekesh between kliyetz and sak, and the Gemara darshans in Shabbos Taf Pei Gimel from that hekesh that mas sak mitaltal moli v'reikon avkol mitaltal moli v'reikon, that only that which could be moved when it's both full and empty is able to be mekabel tuma. But so therefore kliyetz also only if it's mitaltal moli v'reikon is mekabel tuma. But a kliyetz that's omid b'makomo, that never ever moves, so then it's never going to be mekabel tuma. So how could it be that we describe the shulchan as tahar? It could never become tameh. It could never even be mekabel tuma if it never ever moves. So says the Gemara. So v'chotzis b'fnei tuma, and it's also chotzis b'fnei tuma because it would stop tuma since it itself is not mekabel tuma. That's the rule. If let's say you have a body under an awning, so if the awning is not mekabel tuma, the awning stops the tumma, so the tumma fills the room, but it doesn't go on top of the awning. But if you have, let's say, a kli over the mace, and the kli itself is mekabel tumma, so it's not chotzit b'fnei tumma. The tumma goes straight through. So the kliyetz that's asui lenachas is not mekabel tumma and is chotzit b'fnei tumma. So why in the world is the shulchan described as something that's tar? El malamed, it must be that it's not asui lenachas, that it's not meant to just stand there the whole time. That the shulchan is moved sometimes when When did they move it? Shemagbiin also l'olei regalim. They would lift it up to show to the olei regalim. Va'omrim lehem, and they would tell the olei regalim, ru'uchi baschem l'fnei amakom. A reminder of how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you. That Klal Yisrael needs such reminders sometimes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. They would show, look at how much Hashem loves you. Shesiluko kisiduro, that He performs this miracle that the lechem upon Him remains fresh a week later. Shenamar lasam lechem chom biyomi lakcho. And therefore the shulchan is not asur the nachas, because they would lift it up in order to demonstrate what the lechem upon Him looked like to everybody, and that's why it is mekabel tumah, and that's why the nes of the lechem upon Him is considered a nes that happened bachutz, because it was dafka something that was shown to the rest of Klal Yisrael. So indicative of the idea, meaning that there are miracles that happen bifnim, and those might be the greatest of all the miracles. Makom aron einam in amida, the kruvim aron einam in amida, we don't even know what those miracles mean. We couldn't even fathom those miracles. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does certain nisim with us that we're able to see, that we're able to have access to, and we're able to understand, and then other nisim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does behind the scenes that none of us are ever going to be able to see. So we can be Mishabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu about the 10 nisim that He did with us. Those are the 10 nisim that we could appreciate. We can't begin to be Mishabeach for the nisim that we don't even see, that we don't have access to, but we know that they're there, and the nisim that we do see are indicative of the fact that there are other nisim behind the scenes that we don't see. So says Mar Vesu Leka, wait, aren't there more nisim? V'amr Abashai b'shah Shabbat Shlomo Beis Hamikdash Natabo Kol Minim Megad Mishal Zav. When Shlomo Melch built the Beis Hamikdash, he planted golden fruits. V'yimotzin Perosay, and it actually grew more golden fruits. So Bizmanon, like any other tree that would produce fruits on a schedule in the right time, these golden trees produce golden fruits. Uksharuach Min Hashavas Ben, and when the wind would blow, no shrin, these golden fruits would fall off, and the Kohanim would pick the fruits, and they would have these golden fruits that they were able to make parnasa from. Shenamar, the pasuk says, David davening for Shlomo HaMelech, Yirash Kalavanon Pirio, that there should be a lot of peros that come out. And that's those peros are referring to David was being misnave on the peros that Shlomo HaMelech was going to have in the Beis HaMikdash. And not only that, Shenichlesu Nachrim Lehechal, Yavash. And when the Nachrim entered the Hechal, it dried up. There were no more golden fruits. Shenamar Perach Levanon Umlal, that the Perach, that the Levanon was Matzmiach, became dried out as soon as the Beis HaMikdash fell into the hands of Nachrim. V'asar HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'achziran, and la'asadava, Hashem is going to bring him back for us. Shenemar, because when Yishayahu HaNavi is prophesizes about Klal Yisrael, la'asadava, he describes paroach tifrach v'sagel af gilas v'ranim kvod ha'levanon nitan la. So that the kvod of the levanon through the pricha, the flowering, the sprouting, is going to come back again. So why is that not listed among the nisim in the Beis HaMikdash? That's a pretty amazing miracle that there were golden fruits that were growing. So says Mar Nisi to Kavi Lo Kachashiv, nisim that were kavua constantly and never changed, that is not listed among the nisim in the Mikdash that we list in the Mishnah. Only those nisim that were not kavua and therefore came from time to time, and each time it happens, oh, it's happening again. And so I get when something out of the ordinary happens, when a miracle happens, you never know if it's going to happen again. So when it happens again, oh, the days happened again. HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed the miracle again. But a nes that's kavua, that's a constant, it never changes. So that's that doesn't have that sense of ischadshus. So Asher Dasas Lachi, once we mention that, so then we don't need to come on to the answer that the reason the Aron and Kruvim is not listed as the part of the 10 miracles because they're lefnim. You could say Aron Kruvim Nami Nisi Tekvi Ninhu. That was also kavua. That was never changing. That was the layout of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, was simply that they didn't take up any space and it was constantly that way. So that's why they didn't get counted. So now, from here to the end of the parak, we're going to discuss the nes of the smoke of the ma'aracha, and that's going to and through that we're going to talk about the esh of the ma'aracha as well. Samar v'ashan ma'aracha, that we said one of the miracles was that the smoke that came out of the ma'aracha on the mizbeach, no matter how windy it got, that pillar of smoke never moved. So miyav v'ashan de ma'aracha, was there even smoke by the ma'aracha? V'atanya doesn't. A brisa tells chamish dvarim nemru beish al ma'aracha. There are five things that we know about about the Yeshal Ma'aracha. Number one, Revutza Ka'ari. It's crouching like a lion, meaning it looks like a crouched lion. That's the image of the smoke. Ubara Kachama, and it's a clear fire like the sun. It was not red like our fire. V'yeshba Mamish, and it was our fire has no substance to it. This was like coals that had a substance to it. V'ochelas Lachen Kivation, and it consumed moist things just like it consumed dry things. Normally that which is moist will help put out the fire, but it consumed moisture the same way it consumed that which was dry. And v'enam alashan, and no smoke ever came out of it. So how can you tell me miracles about how the smoke looked when it came out of the Ma'aracha? There was no smoke. So says Mar Kikamin b'dehediot. No, there were two different fires in the Beis Hamikdash during the days of Shlomo Melech. There was the Eish that came, that was Yardam in Hashemayim, and then there was the Eish that the Kohanim brought. So we could be Mechalik. The five Nisim that we just identified, that was only by the Eish that was Yorid min Hashemayim. It was qualitatively a different Eish. It didn't look anything like our Eish. It was an Eish that had a different color. It didn't produce smoke. All of these things that we just said, it was an Eish min Hashemayim. We called it Eish. It had a halachic status, I guess, of Eish, but it's not anything like we know of Eish. Some of the posts can discuss whether it's possible that an electric fire has a status of whether like a red hot coil has a status of Eish. After all, it doesn't have the same qualities as our Eish. They say, yeah, you see that you could have Eish even if it doesn't have exactly the same qualities as our Eish from the Eish Min HaShemayim. So Kika, I mean, you get a sense when you read the poskim that discuss electricity when electricity first started, the sense of wonder that that they had in dealing with the halachic ramifications of it. So like the best they can come up with are like nevuos from Yecheskel. That's what the Hebrew language came up with. Chashmal doesn't mean electricity. Whatever Yecheskel meant by that, I'm not sure, but it didn't mean electricity, right? So it's just this the sense of absolute wonder in terms of dealing with these new innovations. So anyway, so Kika Amina B'dehadya, but when we're talking about the Ashana Maracha, that it stayed in a straight pillar, that's the from the fire that was brought by people. The Tanya, v'nasnu b'nei Aaron HaKohen, eish al mizbeach, av b'yishe eish yoredes min ha-shemayim, mitzvah lavi min ha-hedyot. Even though there was an eish that came down in the Shemayim, there was still a requirement to bring an eish min ha-hedyot. Revutza Kari says more, wait a second, was the eish really crouching like a lion? V'atanya, Rabbi Chanina Sagan HaKohen, aniri isi, he said, I saw it, Rabbi Chanina Sagan HaKohen, this fire that came down from Shemayim, revutza kikelev, and it was crouching like a dog, much smaller than an ari. Says more, lo kasha, kan v'mikdash rishon, kan v'mikdash sheni. The Brisa says that it was Revutza Kari was one of the greater things that happened in Mikdash Rishon that was never duplicated in Mikdash Sheni. So in Mikdash Sheni was Kikelev. So it says about Mikdash Sheni Miavai, whoa, you mean to tell me in Mikdash Sheni there actually was an Eish Min HaShemayim that came down? Is that true? It was just like a little bit smaller? V'amar Rav Shmuel Bar Inna, Maidich Siv, what does the Pasuk mean when it talks about Bayis Sheni and it says V'Ertzobo V'Ekaved, Amar Hashem, the Pasuk continues. So V'Karina and the Masorah, we read it, even though it says ve'ekaved, we read it ve'ekavda, with a hey at the end. So, ma'ishna de mechusar hey, why is it missing the letter hey? And the answer is, because elu chamish dvarim shayu bein mikdash rishon le'mikdash sheni. The hey signifies the five things that they had in mikdash rishon and they didn't have in mikdash sheni. Ve'elu hein, what were the five things? So, arv kaparas kruvim, that were hidden at the end of the tkufa of the bayis rishon, they were hidden away. The Gemara is going to explain this later on. Daphne and Bezum, Gimel and Dalit, exactly when it was taken, who it was taken by, where it was put, but there's going to be, but it was not there in Mikdash Sheni. And the second thing is Eish, the Eish that was Yardim and Hashemayim did not exist in Mikdash Sheni. Third thing is Ushchina, there was no Hashras Ushchina in Mikdash Sheni. So Yachonim point out, the Rishonim already pointed out, can't be no Hashras Ushchina. It means less of a sense of Hashras Ushchina. Meaning, Melokal Arts Kvodak, Kadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere, the Ushchina is everywhere, but it's a little bit, there's a more concentrated sense of Hashras Ushchina in Kodesh HaKadashim, let's say, than there is in the Heichal, than there is in the Azara, than there is in the Har HaBayis, there is in Yerushalayim. We have different sense of Ashra in a Beis HaKnesses versus outside the Beis HaKnesses. There is a sense of Ashra Sashchina that in a more concentrated form in certain places, so it didn't reach that Madrega that they had in the first Beis HaMikdash. And the fourth one was Ruach HaKodesh. They weren't Zocha to Ruach HaKodesh or Nevuah. And the fifth one was Urim V'tumim, that they didn't have Urim V'tumim in the Bayis Sheni. So, but bottom line is, you see that one of the five things that they didn't have by Yesheni was the Eish Min HaShemayim. So how can we reconcile the Stira? What did the Eish look like? Did it look like a crouching lion or did it look like a crouching dog? By saying that the crouching dog was in Mikdash Sheni, if all of this is about the Eish Min HaShemayim and there was no Eish Min HaShemayim in Mikdash Sheni. So Amri in Mahava Hava Siyol HaMaseyeh. No, there was an Eish in Mikdash Sheni. But in Bayis Rishon, they didn't need to be Messiah that Eish with anything else. Meaning they would just set up the Marach in the morning, they would bring the Shnei Gizrei Eitzim by Bein Arbayim, and other than that, the Eish Min HaShemayim took care of everything. They never had to feed the fire to keep it going during the day. Mikdasheni, the fire was not as strong, and therefore they had to continuously feed the fire throughout the day in order to keep the fire going. But it did initially come Min HaShemayim. So that's what the Bryce meant, that there, it wasn't in Mikdash Sheni, it wasn't the same Madrega in Mikdash Sheni that it was in Mikdash Rishon. Tan Rabbanan, Sheish Ishosein. There are six different types of fires. Yesh, we're going to list them and then we're going to identify where these six fires existed. Yesh Ocheles Veinoshosa. There's a fire that consumes that which is dry, but it does not consume that which is moist. Yeshosa Veinocheles. There's a fire that consumes that which is moist. It only drinks, but it doesn't consume that which is dry. Vyesh Ocheles Vishosa. There are fires that consume both dry and moist. Vyesh Ocheles Lachem Kivation. There are those that consume both moist and dry. V'yesh esh docha esh, and there's a fire that pushes away another fire. V'yesh esh ocheles esh, and there's a fire that consumes another fire. So what are we referring to with each of these things? Yesh esh ocheles v'enoshos, there's a fire that eats but does not drink. Hadidan, that's our fire, meaning a regular fire. If you give firewood to it, it will consume that firewood, and it will and that will feed the fire, that will make the fire stronger. You put water on it, that will weaken the fire. So it's ocheles v'enoshos. Where do you have shosa ve'eno cheles? Techolin. That's if a person has a fever, that he becomes very dehydrated, needs to drink. He needs to drink a lot of fluid, and he's not hungry. Can't eat anything. So the fire just drinks, it consumes whatever water you put in its path, but it doesn't eat anything. Ocheles vishosa deliyahu. And a fire that's ochel and shosa, that's the fire of Eliyahu, Bahara Carmel, dechsiv, because the pasuk says about the Yesh that Eliyahu asked to descend from heaven, ve'es hamayim asher bata'ala l'checha, that it had the koach to drink the water, not only to eat the dry wood. And ocheles lachem kivation. And then there's a fire that's ocheles lachem kivation de maracha. That's a reference to the fire of the maracha that was that came down on the mizbech from shemayim and would consume the eitzim and the evarim lachem, the moist evarim of the karbanos, as if they were dry. It didn't. It was as if it was consuming dry firewood when it was moist parts of an animal's body. Yesh eish docha eish de gavriel. And there's a fire that pushes away a fire. That's Gavriel. The Malach Gavriel was a Sar Shal Eish, and he went into the Kivshan where Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were thrown in, and he pushed away the fire to make a cavity where they can stand and be unharmed in the Kivshan Eish. So even though Gavriel himself is an Eish, he's able to be Docha, the other Eish that otherwise would have consumed them. V'yesh Eish Ocheles Eish, and there's Eish that consumes other Eish, Dishchina. That's the Eish of the Shchina, Damar Mar, because the Gemara tells us in Masech San Imagine that before HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he set up different pairs of malachim, and he asked them whether you should create a man, and he explained what man would be like, and the first two groups said not to create him. Hoshit etzbo b'nein v'srafan. So when two groups of malachim said not to create man, Hashem put his finger among them and consumed them. So malachim are made out of esh, so the esh of the Shechina consumes the esh of the malachim. Vashem ma'aracha. So now the Gemara goes back to discuss the smoke of the ma'aracha and this miracle that it never swayed in one direction or the other. So Vashem Aracha, Filu Kalarucha Shabaolam, Eimel Jesus Osamim Kom. We said, all the wind in the world is not going to move the Ashram Aracha from its place. Vamar Bisabar of Dimi, Motsai Yom Tavakron Shochag, on Motsai Sukkis, Hakolt Sof and Vashem Aracha. Everyone would look at the Ashram Aracha and they would look at which way it was swaying to determine what type of year it was going to be for them financially. Then note the Klapit Sof, and if it swayed toward the north, it meant that the southern wind was blowing. Anim Smechem Balibat. The Aniyim were very happy, the Balibatim were not so happy. Because that's how they knew that the rain of that year was going to be plenty, and there was going to be a lot of, and because there are going to be so many fruits, they're going to have to sell them quickly, because otherwise they're going to rot. So fruits were going to be readily available at a cheap price, so the Balibatim weren't going to make much money off of them, because if they keep hold on to them for too long, the Schair is all going to rot. And the Aniyim were very happy, there's going to be plenty of fruit available to them. Nata klape darum. If it swayed toward the south, it meant that the northern wind was blowing. Aniyim atzevim balibatim sveichan. Aniyim were sad, and the balibatim were happy. They should gish veshana muatin, because it's not going to be so much rain. Uperos emishtamrin, and therefore the peros are going to last a lot longer. Nata klape mizrach hakol smeichin. If it went toward the east, then it was the western wind. Everyone was happy because the peros won't rot too quickly, so they could introduce them to the market very slowly, but the prices will stay steady as well. Klape maruv hakol atzevin. But if it blew to the west, everyone was sad because that would dry up all the Yisra'im and would cause famine and everything would be very expensive. So the Gemara answers, yeah, it's not a stira, even though we said that the Ashana Ma'aracha stays in one place and doesn't disperse, and yet we said they would look at the Ashana Ma'aracha to see which way it was blowing. It didn't disperse like smoke normally would. As a pillar, it swayed like a palm tree. So Amar Mar, Klapi Mizrach HaKol Smechem, Klapi Marav HaKol HaTzevin, Amar Minu, but I'll ask you a stira. Is that really true that in those directions people would be happy or sad? Mizrach HaSiyolim Yafa, the eastern wind is always good. Marav HaSiyolim Kasha, the western wind is always bad. Ruach Tzvonis, Yafa L'chitim B'shashav Yishlish, V'Kasha L'Zesim, Zman Shein Chotin, and the Ruach Tzvonis is good for the Chitin and bad for the Yizesim. Ruach Drom is Kasha L'chitim B'shashav Yishlish, V'Yafa L'Zesim, Zman Shein Chotin, and the Ruach Drom is bad for the wheat and good for the Zesim. V'Amar V'Yosef Yitim Marzuch V'Siminayich, Shulchan B'tzaf The way to remember which wind was good for what is that the shulchan, which had a wheat on it, it had bread on it that was made from wheat, that was in the north, and the menorah, which used shemen zayis, was in the south. Hay marba didei, v'har marba didei. Each one was beneficial for each wind, was beneficial for that which was placed in its direction. So the northern wind was good for the wheat, southern wind was good for the olives, but bottom line is it's a stira in terms of the Mizrachis being Yafa and the Ma'aravis being Kasha. So it says Ma'alo Kasha. Halan v'haluhu. The Brisa is going according to the Bnei Bavel, and Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi is talking about Ole Regalim, the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, because Bavel is in a lower place and it's a more moist place, and therefore the Ruach Mizrachis that will dry things out is going to be good for Bavel, and the Ruach Ma'aravis, which makes things more moist, is bad for Bavel, but in Eretz Yisrael it's exactly the opposite. So tomorrow we'll pick up at the second parak of Maseches Yoma. Yeah.